Turn to Proverbs 10 and verse 22. I'll cover another verse tonight. Proverbs 10:22 says, "The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it." I probably told you the story before about the telemarketer that was trying to convince me to go on a cruise somewhere in Florida one time, and I was telling her that I didn't want to go. It was just back in like 2008, 2009, and I didn't want to go. I was uncertain about the future and this and that. All you got to do is just get down there and it's free. And I figured it was probably a scam anyway, but I wasn't sure. I'm not interested. And somehow, I forget what I said. I gave her some Bible verse or something. And she says, "The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it." And I still remember that she throwing that verse out at me. And so, but she didn't convince me nevertheless. But she was funny. But anyway, that's the verse we're going to look at here tonight. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich. Blessing is hallowing, consecration. It is the bestowal of divine favor and prospering influence. Favor and prospering influence of God. It is a beneficent gift of God, nature, etc. Anything that makes happy or prosperous, a boon. So a blessing is something that comes to us to make us happy or prosperous, or it's a good thing that's given to us by God. And it says here, the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich. Rich is, when you're speaking of persons, powerful, mighty, exalted, noble, great, having large possessions or abundant means, wealthy, opulent. So, we're going to look at two different ways in which God blesses his children and makes them rich. There's a physical way that God does this, and there's a spiritual way that he does it. And we'll look at the physical first, since the natural comes first before the spiritual. The blessing of the Lord makes rich physically, when God chooses to give it. And he does this in a number of ways. There's means by which he blesses people, his people, to make them rich or wealthy. And we're going to look at four or five of them. The first one is that he gives them intellect and skills and abilities and power to acquire wealth. So he's not, in this case, he's not giving it to them directly, like having somebody mail you a check or getting an inheritance or winning the lottery or something like that. But he gives you the ability to do it yourself. But it's still the blessing of the Lord. It's still coming from him. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 18. The Lord here is talking to Israel and reminding them of what he's done for them. And when they go into the land and they experience all this goodness, he wants them to remember that he was the one that gave it to them, that they didn't get it themselves. We'll start in verse 17. "And thou say in thine heart, my power and my might, and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day." So it's God that gives power to get wealth. And, you know, he blesses some people in that regard, and other people he doesn't. And some people work their whole lives and have hardly anything, and some people work their whole lives and get quite wealthy. And the Lord gives people different skills and intellect and abilities to do that. 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 12 is another verse which tells us that it is the Lord that gives wealth and riches. 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 12. This is in Solomon's dedicatory. I think it's Solomon's. No, it's not Solomon's dedicatory prayer. It's David's prayer. And he says, in verse 12, "Both riches and honor come of thee, and thou reignest over all, and in thine hand is power and might, and in thine hand it is to make great, and to give strength unto all." So riches and honor come of thee. They come from God. If a man has riches, then he got it from God, or else, well, if he's a godly man, he got it from God. If he's not a godly man, he might have gotten it from the devil, because the devil also makes rich, but he adds sorrow with it. We'll look at that here later. So the second way that God gives physical riches to his children as a blessing is that he blesses their labor to be fruitful. So not only does he give them, so the first way, he's giving them the ability and the intellect and the skill, and in this sense, he's blessing their labor to be fruitful. So you can have intellect and skill and abilities, but the Lord still may not bless it. You may work really hard, you may do all kinds of things that appear like they would bring wealth, and then it comes to naught. The Lord has to bless it. It's kind of like if you go out there and you can look up the best gardening techniques, and you can have a wonderful mind when it comes to gardening, and you can go up there and pick out the perfect soil, and you can plow it up, and you can plant your seed, but the Lord's got to give the increase. The Lord has to make those seeds germinate. He's got to send the rain. He's got to make it happen. Let's look at a few verses here. Abraham is an example of this, of the Lord blessing a man's labor to be fruitful. In Genesis 12 and verse 2, you're going to see here that Abraham was a very rich man. So he's just one of many examples in the Bible which shows us that there's nothing wrong with being rich. It's the love of money that's the root of all evil, not the possession of it. Genesis 12 and verse 2, this is when the Lord calls Abraham out of Ur, the Chaldees, and he says, I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. So the Lord said he would bless him, and we know from this verse that the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and the Lord blessed Abraham and made him rich. In Genesis 13 and verse 2, and Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. So he had property and he had money, he was very rich, it says. And then when Abraham sent his servant to go get a wife for Isaac, when the servant went out and he was telling the guy that he met about his master, he relays this information that he's quite wealthy, which is, you know, helps to get a wife for your son. If you come and say, hey, this kid's dad is really wealthy, and he's like, oh, well, give my daughter to him. So Genesis 26, 14 through 15, every man is a friend to him that giveth gifts, as the scripture says. Genesis 26, 12 through 14. Oh, I did, that's right. Genesis 24, that's the verse that I wanted. Genesis 24, 35, thank you. It says, and the Lord hath blessed my master greatly, and he has become great, and he hath given him flocks and herds and silver and gold and men servants and maid servants and camels and asses. So he's apparently become even greater now, because now he's got maid servants and men servants and camels and asses. Before that, he only had cattle and silver and gold, or at least that's all that was mentioned anyway. And then Isaac, his son, followed in his dad's footsteps, and he likewise was quite wealthy. The blessing of the Lord made him rich as well. In Genesis 26, 12 through 14, it says, then Isaac sowed in that land and received in the same year an hundredfold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great. For he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and great store of servants, and the Philistines envied him. And that's what happens when you get wealthy. Either you get a bunch of friends that want your money, or you get a bunch of enemies that hate you for it, one of the two. So that's what happened to Isaac, or both. But see, this is how the blessing of the Lord, it made rich, where Isaac sowed in the land, and the Lord gave him a hundredfold increase, which... that kind of reminds me of what the Lord talks about when he talks about believers, and he gives the parable of the sower, that some bring forth fruit, some 60, some 30, some 60, some 100 fold. Isaac was a hundredfolder, I guess you could say. And then in Psalm 107, 35 through 38, the Lord again talks about how he blesses people and lets their land be fruitful and blesses them with wealth. Psalm 107:35 through 38 says, "He turneth the wilderness into a standing water, and dry ground into water springs. And there he maketh the hungry to dwell, that they may prepare a city for habitation." So he takes a place that was a desert, and he sends rain, and he makes it a fruitful place, and then the hungry go there, and the blessing of the Lord makes rich. And so the fields, and plant the vineyards, which may yield fruits of increase. He blesseth them also, so that they are multiplied greatly, and suffereth not their cattle to decrease. So he blesses the fruit of their hands, he blesses with rain, he blesses the tilling of the land. The blessing of the Lord maketh rich. And one more on this point in Hosea 2 and verse 8. It works the same way with gospel preaching, because Paul likens that to planting and watering, but the Lord gives the increase. You can have the best preacher with the most impressive oratory, the best command of Scripture. He could preach better than Charles Spurgeon, but if the Lord doesn't give the increase, you can plant and water all you want, and people aren't going to be converted. The Lord's got to give the increase. Mm-hmm. "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it," it says in Psalm 127, and verse 1, I think it is. Hosea 2 and verse 8. This is in the midst of God chastising his people and condemning them. It says, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal." See, the blessing of the Lord makes rich, and then sometimes, as Cotton Mather said, religion begats prosperity, and the daughter devoured the mother. And, you know, the Lord made them rich, and then they prepared it for Baal. Their wealth ended up corrupting them. And this is what the Lord told Israel was going to happen to them, too, that they had to be careful about when they went into the land, because they were leaving the wilderness where they didn't have much of anything, and they're going to inherit this land, which was full of houses and vineyards and milk and honey. It was just an amazing land and springs, and it wasn't like the dust bowl that it is over there today. It was an amazing place. And they had to be cautious that didn't turn them away from God, because a lot of people, probably most people, can't handle wealth. You give somebody that doesn't have much money, you give them a bunch of money, probably 9 out of 10, maybe 99 out of 100, it'll ruin them. I mean, if it's any serious amount of money. If it's not a serious amount of money, they'll just blow it and it'll be gone. It might not ruin them, but they're not going to have it very long. But as the old proverb says, a fool and his money are soon parted. But yeah, a lot of money will definitely ruin a man, or a lot of men. Third way that the blessing of the Lord makes rich physically is that he gives his children wisdom, which enables them to manage and retain wealth. So there's two ways that you can get rich. I mean, you could earn a lot. Maybe you end up being a heart surgeon or something, or, you know, some really high skilled person. You can earn a ton of money, and then you can get rich by, you know, spending most of it, but keeping a little bit back. Or you can get rich by earning a little bit and saving a lot. So you can get rich by earning a lot and saving a little, or earning a little and saving a lot. Either way, you know, you can get rich if you do it consistently. Both of those ways will work. There's an old saying that how do you acquire a small fortune? It's you take a big fortune and blow most of it. That's how you acquire a small fortune, right? That's what happens to most people when they get a large fortune. They blow most of it. Probably don't even have a small fortune left. But anyway, God gives wisdom to enable his children to manage and retain wealth. Proverbs 27:23-24. And I've seen this happen. Not that it was a huge amount of money, but I've known people in my own life that somebody leaves an inheritance to children, and half of them, it's gone before they even get spent, before they even get it. And it's just pathetic, but and sad, really. And somebody spends their whole life saving and under consuming, and then gives it to their kids, and it's literally gone before they even get it. And yeah, it's really something. Solomon talked about that, how you save it up and then give it to your kids, and who knoweth if he's going to be a wise man or a fool. So. Proverbs 27, 23 through 24. It says, "Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds, for riches are not forever, and doth the crown endure to every generation." In those days, flocks and herds were a person's wealth. Remember, Abraham had cattle and asses and camels and all that. So if you were a farmer or something like that, that's where most of your money is. And he says here, "Be diligent to know the state of thy flocks." So in other words, go out there, count them up once in a while, figure out how many you have, look at the condition of them. Because riches aren't forever. If you're not careful, that herd eventually will thin out and die. It works the same way with us today. Be diligent to know the state of thy flocks. Look well to thy herds. Take a look at your bank accounts someday. Take a look at your investments. I say someday, once in a while. And, you know, I mean, I got a spreadsheet where I keep track of everything. And every once in a while, I take a look at everything and see where I am, what I am compared to a year ago or 2 years ago or whatever. Be diligent to know the state of thy flocks. And that way you know when, boy, things are starting to thin out here. I'm starting to go, things are starting to go down. And then you realize, oh, I got to make some changes here. If you don't pay attention, though, you might not even realize it until it's too late. Proverbs 11 and verse 16. Proverbs 11 and verse 16. "A gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches." Now, I mean, I suppose you could apply this to physically strong men, that they hold on to it and some thief is not going to break in and steal it, but that's not what this is talking about. It says in Proverbs 24:5 that a wise man is strong, yea, a man of knowledge increaseth strength. That's the kind of strong man that retains riches. A wise man retains riches. He doesn't blow it all. He's frugal with it, smart with it. So that's another way that the blessing of the Lord makes rich, because if you are faithful with the little that you have, it'll turn into a lot. You know, there's a lot of people, I think, and you've probably heard people say this, where they just look at the end of the month or the end of the year, and they're just like, where did it all go? I made $75,000, $80,000, $100,000, $150,000, whatever I made. I made all this money. Where did it all go? I don't have anything to show for it. I don't even know where. I can't even figure out. I can't even think where it all went. But the same thing will happen, and I've experienced this, if you're frugal, and you'll look at your bank account year after year, and you'll be like, where did it all come from? How did I manage to save up this much money? It's just a little bit at a time. It's just making wise decisions on the big things and the small things. And so, you know, both people look and they're astonished at their bank account. One's astonished that I don't know where it all went, and the other one's astonished like, wow, how did it all get here? I didn't even realize that was happening. So it's just a matter of choices. Fourth way that the blessing of the Lord it maketh rich is that he gives his children wealth directly through inheritance or through gifts. And I'll give you a few verses on this. Deuteronomy 25 and verse 19. Deuteronomy 25 and verse 19. It says, "Therefore it shall be, when the Lord thy God hath given thee rest from all thine enemies round about in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance to possess it, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Thou shalt not forget it." All I really wanted from that is that the Lord was going to give him this land for an inheritance. Now that's a pretty big inheritance, a country, the land of Canaan. The nation would inherit the whole land, but each tribe and family would inherit their own piece of ground. The Lord gave that to them. The blessing of the Lord maketh rich. They didn't do anything to get it. All they had to do was basically just trust God. And they didn't do that at first, remember? In 40 years, they had to spend wandering around in the wilderness, and that whole generation didn't get that blessing of the Lord that made rich. They were paupers out there in the desert. But once they did what God said, yeah, there it was. It was all just given to them. In 1 Samuel 2, 7 through 8, 1 Samuel 2, 7 through 8, says, the Lord maketh poor and maketh rich. He bringeth low and lifteth up. He raiseth up the poor out of the dust and lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill to set them among princes and to make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he hath set the world upon them. So he makes poor and makes rich, and he raises up poor people and out of a dunghill and gives them an inheritance among princes. Obviously, they didn't do anything to deserve that. I mean, think about a guy like Mordecai. He wasn't exactly living in a dunghill, but he went from being just a regular old Joe Schmo, some low-level position in the government, to being given Haman's house and all of Haman's property, even those nice big gallows that he could, you know, that Haman was eventually hanged on. But he was, you know, the blessing of the Lord made rich. And you know all Mordecai had to do to get rich? Basically nothing. He literally did nothing. He wouldn't bow down. It's not what he did, it's what he wouldn't do. He did nothing. And he got rich. I'm not telling you that's going to happen to you necessarily, but you never know. I mean, the blessing of the Lord maketh rich. It might. You just, you know, you never know. And if that doesn't work, then just say, I am rich, and then it'll happen, you know. One of the two. That's a... For anybody hearing this long after the fact, that's a shot at the Word of Faith movement that we're looking at in the sermon series right now. Psalm 37 and verse 22. Psalm 37:22 says, for such as be blessed of him, remember the blessing of the Lord it maketh rich, for such as be blessed of him shall inherit the earth. That's a pretty big inheritance, huh? Paul says, all things are thine, all things are yours, he says to the believers there in Corinth, the world, everything's yours, and they that be cursed of him shall be cut off. And of course, the ultimate fulfillment of this is the new earth. God's children will inherit the new earth. And that's going to be quite the possession to have, quite the inheritance. And then also, God can bless with riches by gifts. Which an inheritance is a form of a gift. But just give you one example of this. It was King David in 2 Samuel 8 and verse 6. This was customary in those days, probably still is, I suppose. When somebody would come to visit a king, they would bring him gifts. You know, just figures. That's just the way it works. The guy that already has more than heart could wish, he gets gifts when somebody comes to him, and you know, everybody else doesn't get anything. But you know what? That's okay. That's just the way life is. 2 Samuel 8 and verse 6 says, then David put garrisons in Syria of Damascus, and the Syrians became servants to David and brought gifts. And the Lord preserved David whithersoever he went. Blessing of the Lord it maketh rich by men giving gifts. You know, Jesus said, give and it shall be given unto you. Good measure pressed down, shaken together shall men give into your bosom. If you're generous and help others that are in need, the Lord has a way of making that come back around. And I've seen that happen many times. And then it says, lastly on this point, in 1 Timothy 6:17, that the Lord gives us richly all things to enjoy. And that he does. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17. 1 Timothy 6:17, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. How did those rich people in this world, and he's talking about believers here, he's writing to Timothy, he's pastoring a church, and he's telling, charge them that are rich in this world, well, who's Timothy preaching to? The church, He's got people in the church that are rich. And he's telling them, to charging them, to not be high-minded, to not be proud about it, to not trust in the riches, but in to trust in God. Because God giveth us richly all things to enjoy. So God gave them those riches. And if God ever does give you riches, and you're in a church, a good thing to do is what Paul said there, to be, where does he say? In the next verse, that they do good, these are the rich people, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, that is to give to poor people. And I've seen this happen in churches, where you had wealthy people in churches that took care of poor people in that church and provided for their needs when they weren't in a position to do so themselves. And that's what rich people should do, should use that wealth that God's given them to be a blessing to others, especially others of faith. All right, now the second way that the blessing of the Lord maketh rich is that he makes people spiritually rich. He gives spiritual riches. Turn with me, first of all, to Ephesians 1:3. I added this verse in later. Don't know why I didn't think about it at the time. And Ephesians 1 and verse 3 says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who hath blessed us with all spiritual blessings in heavenly places." Blessed us with all spiritual blessings. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich. And if you don't view spiritual blessings as riches, then you're not thinking biblically. If you only think of physical, material, monetary things as riches, and you don't think about spiritual blessings as riches, then you've missed something. So I'm hoping to show you that if you've missed it. So God does this by, first of all, by giving his children the riches of the knowledge of Jesus Christ, in whom is found all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Let's look at a few verses here. Romans 11:33. If you have the knowledge of Christ, you are a very rich and wealthy person. Romans 11 and verse 33 says, Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Now, this is God's wisdom and his knowledge that belongs to him, and they are deep. They are rich. God is rich in knowledge and wisdom. But you know what he does? He shares that with his children. He blesses them with some of that same knowledge and wisdom, which comes from his word, the knowledge of Christ. Let's look at Colossians 2:2-3. Colossians 2:2-3 says that their hearts might be comforted, being knit together in love, and unto all riches of the full assurance of understanding, to the acknowledgement of the mystery of God and of the Father and of Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So Paul's prayer here for these people, these brethren, is that their hearts would be comforted, being knit together in love, unto all riches of the full assurance of understanding. All riches. So you can be rich in the knowledge of Christ, because in him are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So if you have the knowledge of Jesus Christ, if you have the knowledge of sovereign grace, of the true salvation of Christ, of what Christ actually accomplished on the cross, and you understand that, you're a spiritually wealthy person. You're rich because you have knowledge that the vast majority of the human race does not have. As a matter of fact, that the vast majority of most people that profess to be Christians don't have. You have great riches if you understand the truth of the doctrine of Christ. Look at Ephesians 3 and verse 8. Paul says, unto me, who am less than the least of all saints, is this grace given that I should preach among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ. Yes, the knowledge of Christ is unsearchable riches. You can just, it's like a gold mine that just never ends, and you just keep digging, and there's just more and more and more. And once you break through a vein of gold, then you find a vein of rubies, and when you break through that, you find a vein of emeralds, and right, it just never ends. There's just, when you're digging in the scripture, you never, the riches that you dig up never end. Another way that the blessing of the Lord makes rich, spiritually speaking, is he gives his children a place in his house where they reign as kings. Now, most kings are rich. In fact, I think all kings are probably rich. I don't know of any poor ones. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 8. Although, you know, I mean, granted, in the States, we're not supposed to have a king. We've had a monarchy here for a while, but that's not the way it was set up. But, you know, it used to be that presidents weren't necessarily very wealthy. They didn't get paid all that much. And, you know, our Missouri's claim to fame, Truman, you know, that guy was broke when he got out. He was president for almost 8 years. He took over for FDR and then was elected once. And he got out of the presidency, and he was so broke that they had to set up some presidential retirement fund thing that had never been set up before, or else he would have had to go on welfare. This is what he himself said. He had to go out, they called it relief back then. He'd have to go on relief. He was so broke. You can read about it on Wikipedia. I think that's where I read it, if I remember right. And there was only one surviving president, I think, at the time, and that was, I believe, Calvin Coolidge, if I remember right. And he didn't need it, but he took it to not make Truman look bad. The dude literally was the leader of the free world, as they say, like probably the most powerful man in the world, and he was going to have to go on welfare. He was so broke when he got out of the presidency. Think about that. I don't know what he did with all his money. He had a bunch of failed business attempts before getting into politics. But anyway. Yeah, I mean, they didn't get $400,000 lifelong pensions, you know, back then like they do now. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know what Obama's worth now? I think I read, don't quote me on it, but like $50 million or something like that. So, yeah, when that 400 grand is chump change compared to the kind of money they make when they get out and they get paid back for all of the nice things that they did for all the people that put them into office. So, but anyway, historically, kings were always rich, is my point. So you've been made a king, and therefore you are rich, whether you realize it and recognize it or not. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 8. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 8. And by the way, another U.S. president, good president in this case, that died poor was Thomas Jefferson. He died poor too, believe it or not. Yeah. It was a different world back then. All right, anyway, 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 8. Paul says, now ye are full, now ye are rich. Ye have reigned as kings without us, and I would to God that ye did reign, that ye might we also might reign with you. So here are these saints in Corinth, and he says they're rich and they're reigning as kings. Let me give you another verse. In 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. It says, but ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood. Royal, that's kingly. So you're a kingdom of priests. A royal priesthood and holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So a royal priesthood, that's a pretty wealthy position, isn't it? And that's, he's writing here to, not to the apostles or something, but to a church. He says, there ye also as lively stones are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. There in 2:5. He's just talking to regular old church members just like us. And he says that we're a royal priesthood. And then one more in Revelation 5 and verse 10. Revelation 5 and verse 10. Let's start with verse 9. And they sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. It's a pretty rich position, isn't it? Kings reigning on the earth. A third way that the blessing of the Lord makes rich in a spiritual sense, or a non-material sense anyway, is that he blesses his children with family, friends, and relationships which enrich their lives. Proverbs 12 and verse 2. Proverbs 12 and verse 4. Proverbs 12, 4. I'm just going to start off with close family and work our way out to extended family and then friends. Proverbs 12:4: A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband, but she that maketh ashamed is as rottenness in his bones. So that's what kings wear, is a crown. Crowns are very valuable, right? They're made of gold and jewels and things like that. A man that has a virtuous wife has a crown. He's rich, right? He's maybe not materially wealthy, but he's spiritually wealthy. Proverbs 18 and verse 22. And remember, it's the blessing of the Lord that makes rich. The Lord's the one that gives the virtuous woman. Proverbs 18, 22. Whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing and obtaineth favor, or blessing would be another word for that, obtaineth favor of the Lord. So the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich in having a good wife. Proverbs 19:14. House and riches are the inheritance of fathers, and a prudent wife is from the Lord. You see how the prudent wife, being from the Lord, is likened unto, or at least mentioned in the same context, as house and riches are the inheritance of fathers. Earthly fathers leave house and riches to their children. Our Heavenly Father leaves prudent wives to His sons, right? Leaves them good wives. And then also children. Children are a blessing from the Lord that makes rich, enriches people's lives. In Psalm 127, 3 through 5, I guess it depends on the situation. It either enriches your life or causes you a lot of grief and heartache, one of the two, but it can and should enrich your lives anyway. Psalm 127, 3 through 5, it says, Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord. Inheritage, like that's your inheritance that you get from the Lord. And the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy. You know what happy means? Blessed. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich. You got a quiver full, you got 6 or 8 or 10 kids. That's a blessed, rich man. Probably not materially. He's probably poor if he's got that many kids. But he's rich, spiritually speaking. Proverbs 17 and verse 17. Proverbs 17 and verse 17. So family and friends also. As friends, God blesses people with friends and relationships that also enrich their lives. Proverbs 17:17 says, A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. To have a good friend that's there for you in good times and bad, you know, the rainy day friend, as they say, not the sunny day friend, the one that loves at all times, it's always there for you. That's the blessing of the Lord that makes rich. And to have a brother that's there for you in times of adversity, not that causes adversity, but is there for you in times of adversity, that's a blessing from the Lord as well. And Proverbs 18 and verse 24 says, A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. So if God's blessed you with a good friend, you are rich. I know I've been enriched with the Lord blessing me with good friends over the years. And Proverbs 27 and verse 9. Proverbs 27 and verse 9 says, "Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart, so doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel." If you have a good friend that will give you hearty counsel and will tell you good things to do, will tell you when you're wrong, will be willing to reprove you and give you good advice, you are a wealthy man, because that is a blessing from the Lord. And fourthly, God blesses us, the blessing of the Lord makes rich, by teaching us contentment, which equates to riches, in that both a rich man and a content man are in need of nothing. Look at Hebrews 13 and verse 5. See, this may not be... if he's blessed you with contentment, chances are you don't have what you wish you could have, but you're rich nevertheless if God's blessed you with contentment, because you're happy with what you have and you don't need anymore. Hebrews 13 and verse 5, it says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have, for he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." And Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 8, that if we learn contentment, that's true gain. 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 8, he says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." So in other words, if you are godly, that's a spiritual blessing, and if you are content with what you have great gain. In other words, you are wealthy if you're content with what you have. I'll explain why that is in a second. "For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content." Now, food, anybody that just has food and raiment is not rich by this world's standards, are they? But if you're content to have food and raiment, and I'd throw shelter in there, if you're homeless in the middle of the wintertime, you're probably going to be pretty hard to survive, but... if you had those basic necessities and you are content, then you're rich. You say, well, how are you rich if you have only the bare necessities? Because if you are content, you don't desire or want anything. That's probably a pretty good definition of being rich, right? If you are rich, you don't want or desire anything. You have everything that you could ever want. Well, if you're content, you likewise have everything that you need, and you don't have some deep desire to have more. It's kind of like, if you think about like an example like Warren Buffett, right? The guy's got billions and billions, and he could be no richer than you are, because he's got everything that he needs and doesn't need anything else. And if you're content, then you have everything that you need, and you don't need or want anything else either. So both of you could be content. Rich people generally aren't content. But, I like to think that I have a lot in common with Warren Buffett. We're both rich, right? Because I'm content with what I have, and I don't need anything more. So we're both rich in that case. And we're both frugal. I've read about that with him. Really, the only difference is our age. He's a little bit older than me. He's 92. And he does have $98 billion more dollars than I do. But other than that, I mean, we're pretty much, almost like identical twins.
Wow.
So, yeah. You can make yourself poor for God's sake and yet be rich. Proverbs 13 and verse 7. Proverbs 13 and verse 7. It says, "There is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing." Obviously, he has physical possessions, right? If he made himself rich, he's got a lot of money, he's got a lot of cattle, he's got a lot of camels and asses or whatever, right? He clearly has a lot of stuff, but yet in some sense he has nothing. There's a lot of rich people that aren't happy, that aren't content, that aren't satisfied. Right? You ever hear the old Johnny Cash song, one of my favorites, Satisfied Mind? He says, how many times have you heard someone say that if I had his money, I could do things my way, but little they know that it's so hard to find one rich man in 10 with a satisfied mind? There's a lot of people that made themselves rich and yet have nothing because they're not happy, they're not content, they're not satisfied.
Bad relationships.
They're miserable, they don't have love in their life, whatever it might be. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. Now, he doesn't have physical riches, obviously, because he's poor. Mm-hmm. But in some sense, he's got great riches. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe he quit that job where he had to compromise, and he was miserable because of the things that he had to do that he knew weren't right. And now he took a way more low-paying job, and yet he's rich because now he's living in the will of God. Mm-hmm. Or maybe he quit that job where he was making a lot of money, and he can spend more time with his family and enrich those relationships, right? Maybe he quit a very lucrative career and went into the ministry or something like that, right? Make yourself poor and yet have great riches. So that's another way that God blesses. The blessing of the Lord maketh rich is with contentment. Now let's look at the second half of the verse. And he added, and he addeth no sorrow with it. So the blessing of the Lord maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. Sorrow is distress of mind caused by loss, suffering, disappointment, etc. Grief, deep sadness or regret. Also that which causes grief or melancholy, affliction, trouble. So the Lord doesn't give you any of that stuff when he blesses you with riches, whether physical or spiritually. When God blesses his children with riches, either physically or spiritually, he adds no sorrow with it. No distress of mind, no suffering, no disappointment, no grief, no deep sadness or regret, none of that. He just gives you the riches and gives you happiness along with it. Now, on the other side, when Satan blesses people with worldly riches, sorrow is attached to it. Those who have a carnal desire for riches will be pierced through with many sorrows, the Bible says. 1 Timothy 6:9 through 10. See, Satan blesses with riches too, but his riches come with sorrow. God's riches don't. 1 Timothy 6:9 through 10. So, if somebody hearing this is a wealthy and a rich man, and the Lord has blessed him with physical riches, and you have a lot of sorrow in your life, I guess maybe I should back up. Maybe the Lord didn't bless you with those riches. Because the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. If you have a lot of money, and you're not happy, and you have a lot of sorrow, that's not the blessing of the Lord, because he doesn't add sorrow with his blessing. You got that well somehow, but it wasn't the Lord's blessing. 1 Timothy 6, 9 through 10. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. He doesn't say that those that are rich, I mean, they can fall into that too. But what he's specifically talking about here is they that will be, they that want to be, that's their life's goal to get rich. They will fall into temptation, snare, many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. He addeth no sorrow with it. See, this is not God blessing people with riches. This is they going after it, making it the goal of their life, Satan blessing them with it, and then they are pierced through with many sorrows. They have regrets. They have disappointment. They have trouble of mind because of the things they had to do to get rich, or just the fact that their life was just focused on getting money. And a lot of people have found this out. They focus, they want to get money, they want to get rich, and when they finally get it, they don't feel any better than they did before they got it. You don't even have to believe me. Just go read the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon had everything that heart could wish. He had men servants and women's service. He had singers. He had gardens. He had these huge palaces and castles and everything. He had riches and gold. He multiplied silver in Jerusalem like stones, it says. I mean, this guy had so much money, and he had everything you could possibly imagine. And guess what? Read the book of Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities. He was not happy. He was not satisfied. And people that set their life out for that goal, they're never going to be satisfied. When they make that first million, it's, well, a million's nothing. I mean, heck, you know, I need to have another million. I need to have another million. I mean, a million, heck, I could spend that on a house. I need another million, right? Oh, I could spend that on a boat. I need another, you know, it's never going to be enough. They're going to pierce themselves through with many sorrows. They may gain the whole world, but they'll end up losing their souls. Mark 8 and verse 36. Mark 8 and verse 36. For what shall it profit a man, Jesus said, if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? See, Satan will offer you the world if you'll just make a deal with him. Remember the sermon that I did on Hollywood a while back? And I showed how a lot of those singers and actors flat out stated that they made a deal with the devil. They do that, yeah, and he gives them the world. And they lose their own soul. The blessing of Satan adds sorrow with it. Look at Job 27 and verse 8. Job 27 and verse 8. For what is the hope of the hypocrite, though he hath gained, when God taketh away his soul? Oh yeah, you gain, you pile up all this riches, you got all this money, and guess what? Then God takes away your soul and casts you into hell. It's like that rich man. I don't know if I have this verse in here or not. I don't think I do. But the rich man, remember the guy that his fields brought forth plentifully, and he said, what shall I do? I'll pull down my barns, I'll build greater barns. And the Lord said, thou fool, this night thy life shall be required from thee. Right? That wasn't the blessing of the Lord. That was a man that was not rich toward God, and God took it all from him, and he ended up in sorrow. See, Satan's, quote, blessings, unquote, of wealth and power come with strings attached. Look at Luke 4, 5 through 7. Yeah, if you want to get rich, you make a deal with the devil, and you can get rich. I wouldn't recommend it, because it will end in sorrow for sure. It might end up in hell. Luke 4, 5 through 7, and the devil taketh him up into an high mountain. This is during his temptation after Jesus fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. Showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, all this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine. Strings attached. Just worship me. I give it all to you. All the kingdoms of the world. All the power of it. All the glory of it. You'll be the richest, most powerful man in the world, Jesus. All you got to do is just bow down and worship me. Just this one little string attached. But that blessing brings sorrow and death and suffering. Look at what happens to people that make this kind of deal with the devil. Revelation 13 and verse 4. So remember what the deal was. Just bow down and worship me. Mm-hmm. You can have it all. Let me show you what happens. Revelation 13 and verse 4, and they worshiped the dragon. Remember who the dragon is? That old serpent called the devil and Satan. And they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast, who is able to make war with him? So they worshiped the devil, just like Jesus, like Satan tried to get Jesus to do. And let me show you what happens to people that do that. Revelation 14 and verse 9. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascendeth up forever and ever. and they have no rest day nor night who worship the beast and his image, and receive and whosoever receiveth the mark of his name. Now that's sorrow, if I could ever think of a place that would be sorrowful, being cast into the lake of fire and tormented forever. Yes, the blessing of Satan makes rich, but it adds sorrow with it. Let me just give you a biblical example of this. Remember Judas Iscariot? He betrayed Jesus Christ for money, for 30 pieces of silver. The blessing of Satan made rich, sort of. I mean, 30 pieces of silver is not going to make you rich, but, you know, give you a little money anyway for a little while. John 13 and verse 2. It says, "The supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him." So Satan put this in his heart. Judas made a deal with the devil. And then Judas goes and he betrays him for money. In Matthew 26, 14 through 16. Matthew 26, 14 through 16. "Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests and said unto them, What will ye give me? And I will deliver him unto you. And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him." 30 pieces of silver. He was willing to betray the sinless Son of God, his friend, his close friend, we're told in the Psalms, for 30 pieces of silver. It's amazing what people will do. The price of a slave, basically. Back in the Old Testament, 30 pieces of silver. So he made this deal with the devil. He got a little money for it. And guess what happened? Sorrow. Matthew 27, 3 through 5. "Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself, and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, What is that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple, and departed, and went and hanged himself." So the blessing of Satan adds sorrow with it. And also, when men come into riches through chance or through ungodly means, sorrow often follows. I'll just give you a few verses on this point, and then we'll be done with this verse tonight. So, if it's a deal with the devil, you're guaranteed sorrow. But if you come into riches by chance, like lottery winnings or inheritance or something like that, or especially by ungodly means, then sorrow will follow that as well. Proverbs 20 and verse 21. I should say it can. It doesn't have to. Some people receive large inheritances and it doesn't bring sorrow with it because they're wise enough to handle it and smart enough not to tell anybody else that they got it. Some people win the lottery and their life doesn't change. That's like 1% probably of people, but there is the rare person that it doesn't bring sorrow to. But a lot of them, it does. Proverbs 20 and verse 21, "An inheritance may be gotten hastily at the beginning, but the end thereof shall not be blessed." In other words, the end of it is going to be sorrowful. Remember, the blessing of the Lord makes rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it, but this says, the end thereof shall not be blessed. That means it's not the blessing of the Lord, right? When you come into money like that hastily, which means you probably either you just dumped in your lap or else you were hasty to get it. You did something where you got money and you did something probably underhandedly to get it. Yeah, that doesn't come without sorrow. Proverbs 28 and verse 22. Think about this guy. He's the CFO for Bed Bath & Beyond. I can't remember the guy's name right now. You probably heard about him, yeah. Just in the news, he was being investigated for insider trading or something. They sold the stock when it was high, you know, got pump and dump kind of thing, and made $1 million or something like that, a couple $1 million, and of course, Bed Bath & Beyond is in pretty bad shape and looking like it's going out of business, and he jumped off of his 18th story condo, apartment, whatever, in New York City to his death. Just a couple of days ago. "He that hasteth to be rich, he be pierced through with many sorrows." Proverbs 28 and verse 22. It says, "He that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye, and considereth not that poverty shall come upon him." And if there's one thing that makes a person who wants to be rich sorrowful, it's when poverty comes. That really makes them sorrowful. That's some bitter tasting medicine right there. Let me give you another example here. In 1 Kings 21 and verse 19, this is when King Ahab wanted Naboth's vineyard, and Naboth wasn't going to give it to him because that was his inheritance from the Lord, and Jezebel came up with a plan to get Naboth killed, to falsely accuse him, and then Ahab could take his vineyard. And guess what? That riches ended up in sorrow. It didn't work out so well for old Ahab. 1 Kings 21 and verse 19 says, "And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith the Lord, hast thou killed and also taken possession? And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith the Lord, in the place where the dogs licked the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick thy blood, even thine." And that prophecy was fulfilled. Ahab got killed in battle, and the dogs licked his blood. Ahab died in sorrow. And you know what the cause of that was? Because Ahab wanted that vineyard. He wanted it so badly that he was willing to kill somebody for it. And then 2 Kings 5, 26 through 27. Here's another example of a man that wanted wealth, and he wanted it so badly that he was willing to be dishonest about it, and it ended in sorrow for him too. His name was Gehazi. He was the servant of Elisha. There was a man named Naaman. He was a Syrian, a army man. He was leprous, and there was a little servant slave girl that they had taken from Israel that was his servant, and she says, "Oh, that you'd go to the man of God in Israel, to the prophet in Israel, and he'd heal thee of it." So Naaman went to Elisha, and Elisha healed him after Naaman got some sense talked into him about going and dipping in Jordan seven times. And Naaman brought a bunch of stuff, a bunch of gold and silver and changes of clothes, and he was intending to give Elisha all this stuff. And Elisha said he didn't want it. He wasn't going to take it. And you have examples of that. Abraham wouldn't take the spoil from Sodom and Gomorrah. He didn't want to have anything from those reprobates. David wouldn't take the threshing floor of whoever it was. He was going to buy that with his own money. There's several examples of that in Scripture. But anyway, Elisha refused the money and the garments and all that stuff. He said there in 2 Kings 5 and verse 16, and he said, "As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. So he wouldn't take it. So Naaman left, and he goes back. Well, Gehazi gets this bright idea that he'll run after Naaman and say, "Hey, we changed our mind. We got these couple of guys here. They need some changes of clothes. We'll take some of that gold and silver." And he's like, "Okay," you know, he gives it to him, no problem. Well, you know, when Gehazi gets back, Elisha says here in verse 26, 2 Kings 5, 26, he said unto him, "Went not mine heart with thee?" Like, hey, I know what you did. You know, I was there with you in spirit, basically. "Went not my heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed forever." And he went out from the presence, from his presence, a leper as white as snow. That ended in sorrow. That was not the blessing of the Lord that made rich. That was the blessing of the devil. And it ended in sorrow. And I'll give you one more. James 5, 1 through 5. You just remember that story with Gehazi? That's just a good example of your sin will find you out. You know, he thought he ran out there and nobody knew it. And comes back and, well, the prophet, through some means, there's some supernatural means probably, knew what he did, and his sin caught up with him. James 5, 1 through 5, this will be our last verse for tonight. It says, "Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you." That's what you call sorrow right there. "Your riches are corrupted. and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, ye, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasures together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud. That's part of the way they got their money. They weren't paying their workers for what they had contracted with them for. I didn't finish that clause there, so let me back up or else it won't make any sense. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. See, the laborers are crying to the Lord. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. He says, weep and howl. See, they got riches by ill-gotten ways, and that was not the blessing of the Lord that made rich. It was added. There was sorrow added to it. So that takes care of Proverbs 10 and verse 23. Just remember, the Lord can bless you in two different ways, physically or spiritually. If He doesn't bless you with physical riches, don't be sad about it, because if you know the truth, you've been blessed with spiritual riches, and the Lord will meet your needs. He'll take care of you, even if you never do get rich. And you never want to go about things the worldly, ungodly way, because when you do it that way, those riches are, they come with sorrow. And you know it's not from the Lord if that's the case. So next time we will pick it up with Proverbs 10:23, Lord willing.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.